This morning, we are going to be looking at something that would be called, Who Do You Think You Are? So, who do you think you are? That's the thought that I put on the board today. You'll see it and it'll just turn over in a few minutes. I want to start by reading from the Gospel. And I want to start by talking about a man. One particular man in the Bible. Today we are going to analyse who you quite well know. And I am sure that if you understand where I'm coming from later on, you'll see the connection will, by the end of the service, will meet, and you'll see what is where I'm going with this one. This service has had the idea of mine for about 6 or 7 weeks now, milling around in my head, after I had an experience. That's later. So I would invite you to open your Bibles this morning to the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews. And I am going to start by reading from the Living Bible, the book of Hebrews, verses 1 and 2, and then I'm going to touch on the main topic of the gentleman in verse 7. And I'm reading this from the Living Bible. It's slightly different from the one that I'm going to be doing the presentation from. And it reads this. What is faith? Chapter 11 of Hebrews, verses 1 and 2, and then I'm going to read another verse in after that. The Bible reads this. What is faith? It is the confident assurance that something we want is going to happen. It is a certainty that what we hope for is waiting for us, even though we cannot see it ahead. Men of God in days of old were famous for their faith. By faith, by believing God, we know that the world and the stars, in fact all things, were made at God's command, that they were all made from things that cannot be seen. All right. I'm going to skip forward to a gentleman there in that faith chapter who we are going to study in a little bit more detail again this morning. Come with me to verse number 7. Once again, I will read from the Living Bible. And the man is called Noah. Noah was another who trusted God. When he heard God's warning about the future, Noah believed him, even though there was no sign of a flood. And wasting no time, he built an ark to save his family. Noah's belief in God was in direct contrast to the sin and disbelief of the rest of the world, which refused to obey. And because of his faith, he became one of those who God had accepted. All right, we know the story, yes, but this morning I want to touch on it. Touch on this because it's something of interest. Now, Hebrews 11 is a faith chapter. As we all know, and I'm not going to go through it all, but they're all there if you read through it. You probably know this anyway, that in the Bible there is another chapter in the Old Testament which reads pretty well the same, only in the Old Testament. And it is found in Genesis 5. Now, I'm not going to read it all because I want to come down to one particular man. But if we turn now to Genesis, we're going to finish with the New Testament for a while. We're going to end up there a bit later. But we'll come and look at the book of Genesis, which is the main part of what I want to present this morning. I want to turn to Genesis 5. In Genesis 5, in the early part, reads this. When God, and here is the history, the .com if you like, so who do you think you are? When God created man, he made him in his likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them. And they were created and he called them man. When Adam had lived 130 years and so forth and so forth and so forth, it goes down the history. Come over to verse number 28. Yes, 28. When Lamech had lived 182 years, he had a son, and he called his name Noah. He will comfort us in labour and painful toil of our hands, caused by the ground the Lord had cursed. Was that the story of Noah? Now, if I was to get up here and turn this over, and I hope this goes the right way, I hope so. Oh, yes, I've done the right thing. Thank you. This service today is divided into two parts. And all of a sudden, you are starting to think about the second part. I'll go there later. When we start with Noah, we start at the flood. When men in chapter 6, we start looking at more intensely into what Noah was like. In chapter 6, we'll be starting in Genesis chapter 6, by the way. The main part of the study is what have I got there? I've got from Genesis 5:28 to Genesis 9:29. I won't be reading it all, I'll be just touching on bits and pieces here and there to complete the story today. When man began to increase, chapter 6, verse 1. When man began to increase in number on the earth, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. The Lord said, "My spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal, and his days will be 120 years. Very good. Verse 4 reads this. The Nephilim, or whatever, N-E-P-H, well, I think it's the word, Nephilim, were on the earth those days, and also afterward when the sons of God went to the daughters of men, and they had children by them. They were the heroes of old men, renowned. Now, that word Nephilim, there's a reference to that in my Bible. It tells me, and I'm not going to do it from here today because I haven't got time, that if we look up Numbers chapter 13, 31 to 33, it will actually give you an indication of what the basis of these people were. I then want to go and read something about what Noah was about to have happened to him, and I'm going to go back in my Bible, and I want to read something from my Bible that I forgot to read before. I wanted to read the passage under what I said about Noah in Hebrews 7:11. And for those that want to know, I am sitting down. I can't stand up for long periods. Not able to anymore. The statement in Hebrews, in the New King James Version, reads this. By his faith, when the flood came, God's word were proved to be true. Noah's faith was vindicated, and the world's unbelief was judged righteousness that comes by faith. Noah expressed complete trust in God and his word, even when it returned to things not yet seen. Namely, the coming flood. Thus, Noah also fitted the descriptions of God's righteous ones, who lived by faith. His faith in God's word moved him to build an ark in a dry, landlocked region where it was inconceivable that there would ever be enough water to float the vessel. Noah's instruction. Now I'll go back to where I was. In Genesis chapter 6, we see the opening of what the flood, what this was meaning. Genesis chapter 6, where am I? Yes, here. The Lord has, in verse 5, it then reads this. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on earth had become. That every inclination of thoughts of his heart was only evil in the time. Now if we turn to Matthew 24:37-39, it gives an indication there of what it was like in the days of Noah. And it talks about giving in marriage, drinking and all that particular bad particular things that went on back in Noah's time. And Matthew makes a reference to it in his statement. It is interesting to look at this. How great the earth had become in a bad way. Evil thoughts. The Lord was grieved, it says in verse 6. He was grieved in a way in which he'd seen the decline of man. Morally bad. Can we see something like that happening in this world today? Because I can, because this is a direct thing in line with what we're seeing today. This ICE epidemic, all these problems to do with drugs and all that sort of thing, here we're seeing the depravity of man is such today as it could be back before the flood. What happened? Well, the Lord was grieved, verse 6, the Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth. Men, the animals, the creatures that move along the ground, and the birds of the air. For I am grieved that I have made them, but Noah found favour with the eyes of the Lord. And then my Bible states in verse 9, this is the account of Noah. The account of Noah. Verse 9. And 10. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt. God's sight was full of violence. Just how far could God go when it was this vile on the earth? The earth had become for all people on earth, had been corrupted in their ways. So God said to Noah, I am going to put an end to the people on the earth. It is filled with violence. Because of them, I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. Yes, there it goes. Now comes the instruction pieces. A man of faith, not knowing that he had to build this ark in the middle of a dry, landlocked area in the world that had never seen what was about to happen. A man of faith moved forward. And the next few verses, it tells you what the description of the ark has to be. The ark has to be so long, so wide, so high. Make the roof to finish the ark. But finish it in a cypress wood. Make the rooms inside and coat it with pitch. Now this is an interesting word, this pitch, because it makes a reference to Moses in the day when he was in the basket in the reeds, because pitch was put inside the basket to make the thing waterproof. A bit different from a basket when Moses was in it to an ark that God wanted to have to float on the earth for the next few months. Bit of a difference. So Noah started to build it, didn't he? Make the roof and finish it off the ark with 18 inches of top. Put a door in the side. Now Noah was a man of faith and he couldn't do this on his own. You can imagine Noah trying to build an ark and putting it in his mind. Well, the Lord would have put the measurements in his mind and told him what he had to do. But he had to build it. Have you ever seen a wooden boat builder? Ship builder? Days of old, in the days of sailing ships, these tall ships that come into the harbour, how the backs are nice and all that sort of thing. Everything doesn't leak. The wood swells and all that sort of thing. Now the boat had to be this way. The ark had to be this way. And so, Noah started. Now he had to have some help. But for all this time he was out there and the ark was being built, Noah was probably being ridiculed. Ridiculed because, what's this gentleman of the Bible talking about? In our terms today, has he fallen off his perch? Is he loony? Something must be wrong. Why is he doing all this thing? There's nothing here. We don't know what he's talking about. We'll dismiss him like he's one of those nutcase, excuse the expression, nutcase. Don't worry about him. Off you go. But Noah persisted. He persisted in a way in which God had told him to do. The ark. In verse 22, Noah did everything just as the Lord had commanded him. But in between those verses, it talks about the middle and the upper depth. Everything on earth will perish. But it talks about he will establish his covenant. The ark, and you have to take your sons and your wives, your wife and their wives and all that sort of, all them, to bring into the ark, two of every living creature. But then he gives Noah another challenge. Now I got to think about this last night and this morning a bit. He said, get enough food to last the time you're going to be in the ark for all the creatures. How long was he going to be in the ark? Alright, the Bible tells us, yes, but Noah didn't know probably at that time how long it was going to be. How can I get enough food for two elephants or whatever it is, two elephants and two this and two zebras and two birds and all that sort of thing and feed the chooks and do all that sort of stuff and get enough supplies on the earth around the ark in those days to be able to fill the storehouses with enough food to last all that time. It's an amazing, when you think about it, yes, you read about it and it looks in the Bible, you think about it, it's a logistical nightmare of huge proportion. But he did it. The Lord gave Noah a job. Did he fail? No, he didn't. He came on and he stayed with the action. Pardon the thing. He stayed with the action. He didn't give up. Very easy for us today to give up on a situation if we only get half do a job or do it. I was always taught that if you did a job, try and do it to the best of your ability. The best you can. In my case, it may not look perfect, but at least it'll work in a sort of a fashion. It'll look nice in the front, but if you rub, don't look too closely at it. Stand back. If I was looking at building something, from a model railway or something, look at it from about this distance. Oh, it looks nice from there, but don't get up near that last pew, otherwise you'll see all the cracks and it's out of whack and all that sort of stuff. But that's the way it goes. That's the way I am. I can't help it. Then, look, after he'd done all these things, we come to chapter 7. I've got to watch me time. We come to chapter 7. The Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. Take with you 7 of every kind, so forth, male and all that thing. I won't go into all that. I'll skip over the page a little bit. And Noah did all these things in verse 5. And it tells us there that Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters came to the earth. And Noah, verse 7, and Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives entered the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Pairs of clean and unclean animals, of birds and all the creatures on the earth move along and into the ark. And then it tells us in verse 10, that they stayed in the ark for 7 days before anything happened. Now, that 7 days, you must have think, now, what about all those people gone into the ark, the door is shut and all that sort of thing? Now, I can remember seeing a picture in a book somewhere, and I can't find it at home, showing a picture in one of the spiritual writings of the ark there, and people banging on the door to say, let us into the ark and all that sort of thing, and carrying on, let us in. And the door was sealed. God sealed the door. Then it tells us here, interesting. Where is it? And the rains fell on. Oh yes, no, a bit before this. On the day the springs of the. Where am I? I don't know. I lost my place. For 7 days he was in the ark. Anyway, then the rains came. On the very day Noah and his son Shem entered the ark with his wife and the wives, entered the ark. They had with them all the animals. And then the rains fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. You can see the irony of that, 40 days and 40 nights, because straight away when things... Why 40 days and 40 nights? Why? But then you think in the New Testament, when Jesus was tempted in the wilderness, what was he tempted? How long? 40 days and 40 nights. So this, therefore, is a biblical... reference to the New Testament. So you can see references. Once again, you can see the Old Testament and the parallel in the New Testament. And this is the way it is. We go on. We find that Noah had entered the ark. The animals entered the ark. The animals going were made, and so forth. For 40 days, then the floodgates opened. And the Bible tells us that it rained, and they'd never seen rain like it. They had never seen rain, and the Bible tells us that the floodgates of the springs of the waters under the earth opened up, and the water came up out of the earth. And the water came up out of the earth, I think it says here, somewhere to a depth of about 20 feet, in one of the passages here I read, to about 20 odd feet. Now, later on, I'm going to tell you something a bit more remarkable. 20 feet high enough. Well, I'm going to go one better than that a bit later on. 20 feet. Oh, yes. The waters rose and covered the mounds to a depth of more than 20 feet. Verse 20 of chapter 7. The waters rose and covered the mounds to a depth of 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Birds, livestock, and wild animals, and creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. Now, in the study Bible that I've got, some Bible scholars say that this flood only affected the area of where the ark was and Noah's immediate area. But when one goes back and looks into the earth's history, one can see straight away that the whole earth was covered, because if you look back through time, you can actually see the evidence of fossils and things on this earth today in various countries of the world. So, it did cover the whole world. But Noah, every living thing was wiped out. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days. That's the first reference of 150 days. You are floating around in the earth on top of the water for 150 days, hoping that all that pitch that you put on the ark was going to survive, because Noah wouldn't know whether it was going to survive or not, because Once the boat came up to the level with all the weight in it, think of all the weight of the elephants and all that sort of thing and all those people, must have been a huge weight that must have, that all God in his mind had worked out. The weight of that thing must have been, the ark must have been tremendous. Don't forget it didn't have a rudder. Didn't have propellers. Just floated around. Oh, well, that's another, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to deal with that. That's something you, one can imagine. That's right, yes, that's right. But it's interesting after that, chapter 8 reads two little words. After he floated around, chapter 8 reads this. But God remembered. God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark. and he sent a wind over the earth. God doesn't forget. God doesn't forget. He remembered Noah floating around out somewhere on the top of the water for 150 odd days. And he knew the time had come that he had to do something about it. So he sent a wind, and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of heaven had been closed, and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of 150 days, the water had gone down. Once again, another 150 days. So here's the significance. You see again. And God, on the 17th day of the 7th month, the ark came to rest on the mountain Ararat. Now, some will say that, some will say it's not, but it's Ararat. And it gives a reference to where it is in the Bible, but I'm not going to go there. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible. The water receded for a long time. Interesting. Once again, in chapter 8, we read from verse 6. Here it comes again. After 40 days, Noah opened the window he had made in the ark and sent out the raven. And it kept flying back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find no place to set its feet because there was water over the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. Isn't that a wonderful thought? That a bird, all right, think about the pigeons in Second World War. A bird could go out, fly around, and come back to an ark. I would say that bird was blessed. Something else was looking after that particular dove, because the bird came back. Time again, the bird came back. Interesting thought, that. Just stop. You're right, we know the story, but just stop for a while, pull back and think what I've just said. An animal, birds, watch them fly. Recently, David Attenborough just had a program on one of the channels one night about these birds that fly across America, these geese. And how one bird will lead a gaggle of geese across the countryside. And the father always out the front, and they all line up alongside the front, but one's always in front, and they can fly. They can fly, don't tell me, I don't know how, for miles after, thousands of miles, and they can end up on the same place that they left 12, 18 months, 2 years ago. How do we work that out? Marvellous thought. Anyway, back to Noah. Let's get back to the business. So he sent the dove, the dove returned him. Verse 11. When the dove returned from the ark to him on the evening, there in his beak he found freshly plucked olive leaf in verse 11. Then Noah had knew that the water had receded from the earth. And he waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again. But this time the bird did not return to him. So he knew he was right. Verse 13, it tells us, by the first day of the month, Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah then removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry. And it goes through the months and it tells you what the next thing is. Then God said to Noah, verse 16, come out of the ark, you and your wife and sons and their wives, bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in numbers upon it. Now I better move on because I've got part two to do. So Noah came out together with his sons and his wives. Verse 18. That's right. Then it says in verse 20 that Noah had built an altar to the Lord, taking some of the clean and unclean animals, birds, to sacrifice them as a burnt offering. And Noah and the Lord smelt the aroma, and it felt good. But the promise was there. Never again will I curse the ground because of man, even though every inclination of the heart are evil from childhood. And never again will I destroy all living creatures I have done so for. And then it goes through a reference. Then in chapter 9, it more or less closes off. Closes off with a covenant with Noah. Then God blessed Noah. In verse 1 of chapter 9, then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful, increase in number, and fill the earth. The fear and the dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air, upon every creature that moves along the ground, and upon all fish of the earth. Everything that lives and moves will be food for you, just as I gave the green plants, now I give you everything. But it goes through, but you must not eat of this and that and all the other things. For verse 7, as you be fruitful and increase in numbers, multiply on earth and increase upon it. And his sons, but now I establish my covenant in verse 8, it goes forward. With every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock and so forth, it goes through. Never again will all life be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again will there be flood to destroy the earth. That's the promise of God's word. And then it talks about the covenant. And from verse 12 to 18, it talks about life whenever the... verse 16. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind of the earth. How many times do we see a rainbow in the earth these days? Do we stop and think of all the magical colours? And here it is, predicted in the Bible, in Genesis, in the early parts of Genesis. The early parts of Genesis, it's here. If I have to move on quickly, which I've got to do now because it's way past my talking time. But anyway, that's life. That's the way it goes. I want to finish up by this. And the first part only. The sons of Noah in 9, if I come down to chapter 9, verse 29, we find that Noah was 601 years old when he came out of the ark, and he became a farmer, and he got all some bad wine one day, and he had a little drinky, and things didn't go quite the way, and then in the Bible there from about verse 24 to 28, it tells us what happened. And then it says this, in verse 29, altogether Noah lived 950 years, and then he died. 950 years. I want to read something. And then he died, it says. As the tenth and last member of the genealogy of Seth, it mentions Seth, Noah had an obituary that ended like those of his worthy ancestors. It tells us that. Noah's faith saw him through. Many trials and tribulations became Noah's way. And he overcame them because he had the faith and encouragement to stand up for the belief that he held that God would make everything possible if he believed in him. I've only touched on one this morning, because this one is going to lead into the next part. Noah was a man of faith. If God said to do something, he did it. Today somebody would ask you to jump, and you'd say, how high? And that's being a little bit philosophical, but that's the way it is. Noah did as God wanted him to do. Do we? I now move to part two. Part two, you've been thinking here this morning, reads on the board, the Lockyer Valley, Queensland. beautiful one day, perfect the next. The flood that took the valley by surprise. How many of you remember one summer's morning, about 2 or 3 years ago, seeing the catastrophic news on the television and the pictures of this particular flood? Why do I mention it this morning? Because in late July and early August, I was given the privilege, and I say this, of being in that valley by sheer chance and not knowing where I was until I got off a Greyhound bus in Gatton one morning about 9:20. Off the bus in the main street of Gatton, visiting family friends up there for sickness reasons, in the main street of a country town that I hadn't been in for about 45 years. I didn't know it was the Lockyer Valley, had no idea. We got off the bus, and this bus, went, by the way, coach, went all the way from Brisbane out to a place called Charleville, which was 875 kilometres further west than Gatton. And if you're going all the way out to Charleville and places out there in Quilpa, you wouldn't get out there till midnight. Because the bus went in and out, Dalby, Roma, Chinchilla and all that round there, servicing these points out there because the trains are virtually long gone. Virtually. I didn't know where I was until I'd gone to the convenience, and I walked back out of the convenience across the road from where my friend was sitting, waiting for me. Going to, as my age, you've got to go and visit Auntie. And I look up on the town hall. And this was my first indication of where I was, because it said, "The Lockyer Valley welcomes you," on the town hall. Oh, the Lockyer Valley. Fair enough. Where was I going to be staying? Quite another matter. The flood that took the valley by surprise. Literally. The towns that were affected, alright, I'll start this way. The Lockyer Valley is situated approximately 85 kilometres west of Brisbane in a deep valley situated below the Toowoomba Ranges. I said below the Toowoomba Ranges, some 40 kilometres further west, with Toowoomba at the top of the range. The layout of the Lockyer Valley is very steep. It is a very steep fall away from the city, from Toowoomba that is. A few years ago, in mid to late summer, a very large and deep supercell storm developed in the surrounding mountain range with a number of towns directly in its path. Remember what I'm talking about? Remember seeing this? The towns and cities were this: Ipswich, Laidley, Gatton, Grantham. Grantham was the worst town hit with the most destruction. But of course, Toowoomba copped it as well. This super flood, which came as a severe heavy rains, continued for hours. With the flood waters rising rapidly, the devastation and the severe force of the water cut and ripped out concrete culverts, bridges, and all infrastructure in its path. Flooded main areas of the towns above, swift above what I've just said, swept away cars, machinery, farm machinery, barns, outhouses, and ripped the stilts of Queensland-style houses and moved some of these houses up to 4 kilometres away from where their standing position was. 4 kilometres from their dwelling. The sheer force of the storm drove people away as much as anything else. And the water depth in some of these houses and areas was 20 feet. And that's only in the houses around this town. I've got the best bit to come yet. Some people were caught in this storm in a bad way. In a very bad way. I was lucky enough to see the devastation because where I was staying was about 40 kilometres above the town, up the top of a mountainside, some 90 metres up the side of a mountain. 90 metres up the side of the mountain, looking straight down the valley at Gatton, 40 kilometres away. To get to that point, you had to go out on the road for 40 kilometres and then straight up. But the towns back then were washed away. The town of Grantham needs a special mention, as this was the town that suffered the worst devastation of all, as it was the worst hit area, with hay, stock, animals lost, dogs, cats missing, all gone. Never found and never seen again, never to be seen again, but just swept away like twigs. Swept away. You remember seeing it? Railway bridges and steel train tracks torn from the ground and bent in all shapes and angles like playing with plasticine. You know, I saw the pictures, you probably did on the television too. Steel bent over in all shapes and forms. This was the force of water. The force of the water was absolutely stunning, I'm told. The sound of swift running water with its own making up its own mind, tearing away infrastructure and like an enormous scale, what a horrific experience. What a horrific experience. What about the sound of water rushing past you? I haven't got to the best bit yet. I'm only warming up. I'm only warming up on this one. This is a bad one. On the particular morning, people were out shopping, enjoying life one moment, and then caught out by the event the next, not knowing if they would ever see their homes or loved ones ever again. Some didn't. I'll get to that later. Parts of the Lockyer Valley, below where I was staying, listen to this, were under 60 feet of water. And that's been registered and proven by the meteorologist. 60 feet of water. The water came out of the Toowoomba Ranges that fast down these valley, down this particular valley. It was like channeling water down a valley floor through that door. Everything had to go downhill through that door, and these towns were at the bottom of that door. Everything had to go down through there. Culverts were moved, bridges completely lost. The worst is yet to come. The event next, not knowing where they were. Parts of the Lockyer Valley were under 60 foot of water, swirling, dirty water and smelly water for days. Yes, under 60 foot of water. Also the part of Queensland, the food bowl. So, cabbages, crops of food, grapes, oranges, all that sort of thing, completely gone. I didn't know this area was a food bowl for southeast Brisbane markets and things like that till I actually was shown it. All gone, wiped away. During this time, you had to watch out for things like this. Snakes, spiders, frogs, and other nasty creatures, creepy crawly things, dislodged from the habitat. This was it. Whichever way you looked, under total chaos and devastation. How did men cope with this in their mind? How would you like to come home to your place and see your place? Twigs, nothing there, which has happened up there, as I saw them. Twigs, nothing there. I'll finish in a few minutes. Just nothing. Twigs. All you got. Under 60 foot of water, whichever way you look. The facts of the flood. Oh, by the way, all landline phones wiped out. No landline phones. So that speaks a good idea to have a mobile phone. Not this bunny. But, not landline phones were gone. No communication. If you didn't have a landline phone, you were gone. The facts from the floods are this. The human life that was lost, never to be seen again. I'm not going to go into any one particular incident, but you remember the car scene with the lady and the kiddies and the helicopter coming in, take one child and come back and the lady was gone. washed away in the flood, never to be seen again. It is estimated by the Weather Bureau people that it rained heavily, causing 40 millimetres of rain, and that's on the conservative side. I'll tell you the real truth after if you want to know. 40 millimetres of rain to fall per minute during the downpour. And that's on the conservative side. And I'm able to confirm that by three independent people who have told me the same thing. Think about that. 40 millimetres of rain per minute for the duration of the storm. Think about that. 40 millimetres. And that's on the conservative side. Think about that. You say 35, you might see 4 millimetres in the glass in the morning here and you think yourself lucky. But when it rains up there, it torrents. It's absolutely stunning what's up there. That's the conservatory. Bridges, culverts washed away like total destruction. A pub was washed away up there and it's been reclaimed. It was found about 8 kilometres down the river, washed off its stilts. It's been reclaimed. They got all the fridges. Everything was intact. It was just picked up and washed down the creek. That pub, excuse the expression, has been put back on its stilts in the same place, and they call it now the floating pub because it floated away, and they were able to bring it back to where it was. And this was around Grantham. Businesses wrecked. Houses gone. Garages shut up. There's one garage I saw up there, it's just got a big steel fence around it because all the water has got into the fuel and it's contaminated. They can't touch it. It's got to stay there for so many years before they can move it away. Houses lost, lives, cars washed away, never seen again to this day. Think about that. Cows swept away, rolling livestock swept away just like that. One cow was found 85 kilometres down the river, and the vets were able to pick it up about 5 days later by its ear tag and return to its rightful owner. A cow survived all that horrific waters and flushing cars and all that sort of thing, and it survived to this day, and it was brought back to its. An unbelievable story. Its original site found farmers unidentified by the ear tag. The aftermath of this was this. I was taken up onto the side of the mountain where I was staying up there. I was up there for about 3 weeks. And I was shown their house, which is 90 metres up the side of this cliff. And they were locked in their house for 21 days. The couple were locked in their house. They could not move out of there because the water was just below their front gate. And they had to have helicopters come in and drop food to them. And they had people going around all the time, all the night time. He said it was eerie. It was something like out of Star Wars or Encounters, the helicopters flying around the town making sure everyone was right. But the amount of water up there was just unbelievable. Being flooded in for 21 days gave human life a different thought. But the sound of the water and the rain on the roof, you had to check every known crack and every known joint. The rain was that severe that it was coming in under the corrugate, got where they lap over the sheet. It was that severe it was beating in. That's how severe this particular storm was. The upside of this is this, that the people rallied around them and were able to help. But the tragic loss of life is this. It was something that was unbelievably sad. But it has been said. 15 cars they've never found. And they've never found to this day. 15 cars washed away. Now the number of people up there that were lost, I don't want to go into. It was horrific. But the authorities up there now, and this took me by surprise, have told the local area that if you in the future go down to your farm and you're in the back paddock and you're doing something with your tractor, you're on this, doing that and pulling up grass, just be careful what you're doing because you might find a car or you might find human remains or you might find the body of someone that went missing in the flood and they've never been able to find. Everybody is now aware and conscious of the fact that before you dig, watch and be careful. And notify the authorities, police, SES, whatever, the minute you find something go wrong. So that we can come out and help. Because they think in years to come, might be 10, 15, whatever, they'll find things buried in the earth. But the sheer size of the rain on this particular place, up there, that valley, you remember seeing the tracks. You remember the helicopters, and you can remember the ABC helicopter. He went over, that chap that was killed over in Paul Lockyer. He died over in South Australia doing something a few years ago. Helicopter smash. He was up there. But the towns have gradually returned to what they are today. But the community spirit is such today that it has bound them together. And this is where I want to end up today, because I want to say that the spirit of community is within that area, around the Lockyer Valley, is very, very strong. And the comparison today is us, as Christians, today as we sit in this church. We are a community of church-loving believers. A community in this church. No matter whether we go to Geelong, we go to Camperdown, or we go anywhere else, doesn't matter. Or Brisbane, or Concord, or Strathfield, or wherever. We are a community of church members. And we can stick together. But we have one common goal, and that goal is Jesus Christ our Lord. And we have to attain that spiritual uplifting through constant prayer with Jesus Christ. Constant prayer. He is my rock. He is my Saviour, in whom I believe. Just in closing, a text comes to my mind, as it always does. Revelation 3:21-22. Don't turn it up, I'll just tell it to you. I stand at the door and knock. Jesus. If any man opens the door and lets me in, I will enter and come into his life. And I pray today that our experience through Noah being faithful and me explaining to my utter surprise at what I have seen, the devastation of what water can do and cut into the landscape and move boulders, yes, boulders, down the valley floor, was something that you have to see to believe. I was privileged to be able to say I have been to the Lockyer Valley in Queensland. What does it say? Beautiful one day, perfect the next. The flood that took the valley by surprise. And that's exactly the way it was. So today I want to close by saying this. We are thankful to be here on the Sabbath day. God said there would never be another flood covering the whole earth. He didn't say that there was going to be little floods here and there. There's going to be catastrophic times. We've seen that in the world today. We've seen floods. We've seen tsunamis. We see all these things. They're all sent to try us. But one thing is certain. Never underestimate the power of water. Because one only has to watch the television to see these surfers down here at Torquay and overseas, these surfers going along the water on the waves. Surfing or down the water and all that sort of thing. Torquay, to see the power of the water and all that sort of thing. You have to be careful of the water. It demands our respect. Just as Noah respected the water in his day and the flood and Jesus and the ark, and God, I'm sorry, we too can respect the water around us. Water can be a lovely thing. Beautiful. Sail on the water, go overseas, go here and go there if those want it. Or it can be treacherous. But then one thinks of the waterfalls in the world. The power of the waterfall when it comes down over the Victoria Falls in South Africa. Yes, wake up, John. The Victoria Falls in South Africa. The largest spasm of water in the world. 190 or so metres down over the cliff face. Water is a magic thing. It's beautiful. But it can also be very, very dangerous, as we've proved in this country time and time again. Thank you for this morning.